Fanny Weatherwax surreptitiously loosened her boots. She was also debating whether to remove her vest. She probably didn't need all three. "We ought to be getting on," she said. "Oh, I'm fed up with the broomsticks," said Nanny. "More than a couple of hours on a stick, and I've gone rigid in the derriere." She looked expectantly at the other two. "That foreign for bum," she said. "Although it's a funny thing, in some foreign parts, bum means tramp, and tramp means hobo. Funny things, words."
"A laugh a minute," said Granny.
"The river's quite wide here," said Magrat. "There's big boats. I've never been on a proper boat. You know, the kind that doesn't sink easily."
"Broomsticks is more witchy," said Granny, but not with much conviction. She did not have Nanny Ogg's international anatomical vocabulary, but bits of her she wouldn't even admit to knowing the names of were definitely complaining.
"I saw them boats," said Nanny. "They look like great big rafts with houses on. You wouldn't hardly know you're on a boat, Esme. Here, what's he doing?"
The innkeeper had hurried out and was taking the jolly little tables back inside. He nodded at Nanny and spoke with a certain amount of urgency.
"I think he wants us to go inside," said Magrat.
"I likes it out here," said Granny. "I likes it out here, thank you," she repeated.
Granny Weatherwax's approach to foreign tongues was to repeat herself loudly and slowly.
"Here, you stop trying to take our table away," snapped Nanny, thumping his hands.
The innkeeper spoke hurriedly and pointed up the street. Granny and Magrat glanced inquiringly at Nanny Ogg. She shrugged.
Didn't understand any of that," she admitted.
"We're stopping here, we are, thank you," said Granny.
The innkeeper's eyes met hers. He gave in, waved his hands in the air in exasperation, and went inside.
"They think they can take advantage of you when you're a woman," said Magrat.
She stifled a burp discreetly and picked up the green bottle again. Her stomach was feeling a lot better already.
"That's very true. Do you know what?" said Nanny Ogg. "I barricaded myself in my room last night, and a man didn't even try to break in."
"Gither Ogg, sometimes you..."
Granny stopped as she caught sight of something over Nanny's shoulder.
"There's a load of cows coming down the street," she said.
Nanny turned her chair around.
"Oh, must be that bull thing Magrat mentioned," she said. "Should be worth seeing."
Magrat glanced up. All along the street, people were craning out of every second-story window. A jostle of horns and hooves and steaming bodies was approaching rapidly.
"There's people up there laughing at us," she said accusingly.
Under the table, Grebo stirred and rolled over. He opened his good eye, focused on the approaching bulls, and sat up. This looked like being fun.
"Laughing?" said Granny.
She looked up. The people aloft did indeed appear to be enjoying a joke. Her eyes narrowed.
"We're just going to carry on as if nothing is happening," she declared.
"But they're quite big bulls," said Magrat nervously.
"They're nothing to do with us," said Granny. "It's nothing to do with us if a lot of foreigners want to get excited about things. Now, pass me the herbal wine."
As far as Lagrote Carbona, innkeeper, could remember the events of that day, they seemed to happen like this. It was the time of the thing with the bulls, and the mad women just sat there drinking absinthe as if it was water. He tried to get them to come indoors, but the old one, the skinny one, just shouted at him. So he let them bide, but left the door open. People soon got the message when the bulls came down the street with the young men of the village after them. Whoever snatched the big red rosette from between the horns of the biggest bull got the seat of honour at that night's feast. Plus, Lagro smiled a smile of 40 years' remembrance, a certain informal but highly enjoyable relationship with the young women of the town for quite some time after. And the mad women just sat there. The leading bull had been a bit uncertain about this. Its normal course of action would be to roar and paw the ground a bit to get the targets running in an interesting way, and its mind wasn't able to cope with this lack of attention. But that hadn't been its major problem, because its major problem had been 20 other bulls right behind it. And even that ceased to be its major problem, because the terrible old woman, the one all in black, had stood up, muttered something at it, and smacked it between the eyes. Then the horrible dumpy one, whose stomach had the resilience and capacity of a galvanized water tank, fell backwards off her chair, laughing, and the young one, that is, the one who was younger than the other two, started flapping at the bulls as if they were ducks. And then the street was full of angry, bewildered bulls, and a lot of shouting, terrified young men. It's one thing to chase a lot of panicking bulls, and quite another to find that they're suddenly trying to run the other way. The innkeeper, from the safety of his bedroom window, could hear the horrible women shouting things to one another. The dumpy one kept laughing and shouting some sort of battle cry. "Try the horseman, Saw Desmi." And then the younger one, who was pushing her way through the animals as if being gored to death was something that only happened to other people, found the lead bull and took the rosette off it with the same air of concern as an old woman may take a thorn out of her cat's paw. She held it as if she didn't know what it was or what she should do with it. The sudden silence affected even the bulls. Their tiny little bloodshot brains sensed something was wrong. The bulls were embarrassed. Fortunately, the horrible women left on a riverboat that afternoon, after one of them rescued her cat, which had cornered 25 stone of confused bull and was trying to toss it in the air and play with it. That evening, La Grotte Cabona made a point of being very, very kind to his old mother. And the village held a flower festival next year, and no one ever talked about the thing with the bulls ever again. At least, not in front of the men. The big paddle wheel sloshed through the thick brown soup of the river. The motive power was several dozen trolls under a sunshade, trudging along an endless belt. Birds sang in the trees on the distant banks. The scent of hibiscus wafted across the water almost, but unfortunately not quite, overpowering the scent of the river itself. "Now this," said Nanny Ogg, "is more like it." She stretched out on the deck chair and turned to look at Granny Weatherwax, whose brows were knitted in the intense concentration of reading. Nanny's mouth spread in an evil grin. "You know what this river's called?" she said.
"No."
"It's called the Vukes River."
"Yes?"
"Know what that means?"
"No."
"The Old Masculine River," said Nanny.
"Yes?"
"Words have sex in foreign parts," said Nanny, hopefully. Granny didn't budge.
"Wouldn't be at all surprised," she murmured. Nanny sagged.
"That's one of Desiderata's books, isn't it?"
"Yes," said Granny. She licked her thumb decorously and turned the page.
"Where's McGrath gone?"
"He's having a lie down in the cabin," said Granny, without looking up.
"Tummy upset?"
"Nah, it's a head this time. Now be quiet, Gither, I'm having a read."
"What about?" said Nanny cheerfully. Granny Weatherwax sighed and put her finger on the page to mark her place.
"This place we're going to," she said, "Genua. Desiderata says it's decadent."
Nanny Ogg's smile remained fixed.
"Oh, yes," she said. "That's good, is it? I've never been to a city before."
Granny Weatherwax paused. She'd been pondering for some while. She wasn't at all certain about the meaning of the word decadent. She dismissed the possibility that it meant having 10 teeth, in the same sense that Nanny Ogg, for example, was unident. Whatever it meant, it was something Desiderata had felt necessary to write down. Granny Weatherwax did not generally trust books as a means of information, but now she had no choice. She had a vague idea that decadent had something to do with not opening the curtains all day.
"She says it's also a city of art, wit, and culture," said Granny.
"Oh, we shall be all right there, then," said Nanny, confidently.
"Particularly noted for the beauty of its women, she says here."
"We shall fade right in, no trouble."
Granny turned the pages carefully. Desiderata had paid close attention to affairs all over the disc. On the other hand, she hadn't been writing for readers other than herself, so her notes tended to the cryptic and were aid memoir rather than coherent accounts. Granny read, "Now L rules the city as the power behint the throne, and Baron S, they say, has been killed, drowned in the river. He was a wicked man, though not, I think, as wicked as L, for she says she wants to make it a magic kingdom, a happy and peaceful place, and when people do that, look out for spies on every corner, and no man dare speak out, for who dares speak out against evil done in the name of happiness and peace? All the streets are clean and axes are sharp, but E is safe, at least, for now L has plans for her. And Mrs. G, who was the Baron's amour, hides in the swamp and fights back with swamp magic. But you cannot fight mirror magic, which is all reflection. Fairy godmothers came in twos, Granny knew. So that was Desiderata and L. But who was this person in the swamp?
Giffa, said Granny.
Who was that?
Said Nanny Ogg, who was dozing off.
Desiderata says some woman here is someone's armour.
Oh, it's probably a metaphor,
said Nanny Ogg.
Ow, said Granny darkly. One of them things.
But no one can stop Mardi Gras, she read. If anything can be done, it be on Samadhi Nwit Mort, the last night of Carnivali, the night halfway between the living and the dead when magic flows in the streets. If L is vulnerable, it is then, for Carnivali is everything she hates. Granny Weatherwax pulled her hat down over her eyes to shield them from the sun.
It says here they have a great big carnival every year, she said. Mardi Gras, it's called.
That means fat lunchtime, said Nanny Ogg, international linguist. Garcon, et cetera gross mint tulip avec petit bowl de peanuts, pour favor.
Granny Weatherwax shut the book. She would not, of course, admit it to a third party, least of all another witch, but as Genua drew nearer, Granny was becoming less and less confident. She was waiting in Genua, after all this time, staring at her out of the mirror, smiling. The sun beat down. She tried defying it. Sooner or later, she was going to have to give in, though, and it was going to be time to remove another vest. Nanny Ogg sat and drew cards for her relatives for a while, and then yawned. She was a witch who liked noise and people around her. Nanny Ogg was getting bored, and with a big boat, more like a floating inn, and she felt certain there was some excitement somewhere. She laid her bag on her seat and wandered away to look for it. The trolls plodded on. The sun was red, fat, and low when Granny Weatherwax awoke. She looked around guiltily from the shelter of her hat brim in case anyone had noticed her asleep. Falling asleep during the day was something only old women did, and Granny Weatherwax was an old woman only when it suited her purposes. The only spectator was Grebo, curled up on Nanny's chair. His one good eye was fixed on her, but it wasn't so terrifying as the milky white stare of his blind one.
Just considering our strategy, she muttered, just in case.
She closed the book and strode off to their cabin. It wasn't a big one. Some of the staterooms looked huge, but what with the herbal wine and everything, Granny hadn't felt up to using any influence to get one. Magrat and Nanny Ogg were sitting on a bunk in gloomy silence.
"I feel a bit peckish," said Granny. "I smelled stew on the way here, so let's go and have a look, eh? What about that?"
The other two continued to stare at the floor.
"I suppose there's always pumpkin," said Magrat. "And there's always the dwarf bread."
"There's always the dwarf bread," said Nanny automatically. She looked up, her face a mask of shame.
Esme, you know the money?
The money what we all gave you to keep in your knickers for safety, said Granny.
Something about the way the conversation was going suggested the first few pebbles slipping before a major landslide.
That's the, money I'm referring to.
The money in the big leather bag that we were going to be very careful about spending, said Granny.
You see, the, money...
Oh, that money, said Granny.
Is, gone, said Nanny.
Stolen?
She's been gambling, said Magrat in tones of smug horror, with men.
It wasn't gambling, snapped Nanny. I never gamble. They were no good at cards. I won no end of games.
But you lost money, said Granny.
Nanny Ogg looked down again and muttered something.
What? Said Granny.
I said I won nearly all of them, said Nanny. And then I thought, here, we could really have a bit of money to, you know, spend in the city. And I've always been very good at cripple, Mr. Runyon.
So you decided to bet heavily.
How did you know that?
Got a feeling about it, said Granny wearily. And suddenly, everyone else was lucky. Am I right?
was weird, said Nanny.
Well, it's not gambling, said Nanny. I didn't see it was gambling. They were no good when I started playing. It's not gambling to play against someone who's no good. It's common sense.
There was nearly $14 in that bag, said Margaret, not counting the foreign money.
Granny Weatherwax sat down on the bunk and drummed her fingers on the woodwork. There was a faraway look in her eyes. The phrase card sharp had never reached her side of the Ramtops, where people were friendly and direct, and should they encounter a professional cheat, tended to nail his hand to the table in an easy and outgoing manner, without asking him what he called himself. But human nature was the same everywhere.
"You're not upset, are you, Esme?" said Nanny, anxiously.
"I expect I can soon pick up a new broom when we get home."
"What?"
"After she lost all her money, she bet her broom," said Magrat triumphantly.
"Have we got any money at all?" said Granny.
A trawl of various pockets and knicker legs produced 47 pence.
"Right," said Granny. She scooped it up. "That ought to be enough, to start with, anyway. Where are these men?"
"What are you going to do?"
said Magrat.
"I'm going to play cards," said Granny.
"You can't do that," said Magrat, who had recognized the gleam in Granny's eye. "You're going to use magic to win. You mustn't use magic to win, not to affect the laws of chance. That's wicked."
The boat was practically a floating town, and in the balmy night air no one bothered much about going indoors. The riverboat's flat deck was dotted with groups of dwarfs, trolls and humans lounging among the cargo. Granny threaded her way between them and headed for the long saloon that ran almost the entire length of the boat. There was the sound of revelry within. The riverboats were the quickest and easiest transport for hundreds of miles. On them you got, as Granny would put it, all sorts, and the riverboats going downstream were always crowded with a certain type of opportunist as fat lunchtime approached. She walked into the saloon. An onlooker might have thought it had a magic doorway. Granny Weatherwax, as she walked towards it, strode as she usually strode. As soon as she passed through, though, she was suddenly a bent old woman, hobbling along, and a sight to touch all but the wickedest heart. She approached the bar and then stopped. Behind it was the biggest mirror Granny had ever seen. She stared fixedly at it, but it seemed safe enough. Well, she'd have to risk it. She hunched her back a little more and addressed the barman.
"Excusez moi, young hom," she began.
Something about Nanny Ogg rubbed off on people. The barman gave her a disinterested look and went on polishing a glass.
"What can I do you for, old crone?" he said.
There was only the faintest suggestion of a flicker in Granny's expression of elderly imbecility.
"Oh, you can understand me," she said.
"We gets all sorts on the river," said the barman.
"Then I was wondering if you could be so kind as to loan me a deck. I think it's called of, cards,"
quavered Granny.
"Going to play a game of old maid, are you?" said the barman.
There was a chilly flicker across Granny's eyes again, and she said,
"No, just patience. I'd like to try to get the hang of it."
He reached under the counter and tossed a greasy pack towards her. She thanked him effusively and tottered off to a small table in the shadows, where she dealt a few cards randomly on the drink-ringed surface and stared at them. It was only a few minutes later that a gentle hand was laid on her shoulder. She looked up into a friendly, open face that anyone would lend money to. A gold tooth glittered as the man spoke.
"Excuse me, good mother," he said, "but my friends and I,"
he gestured to some more welcoming faces at a nearby table,
"would feel much more comfortable in ourselves if you were to join us. It can be very dangerous for a woman travelling by herself."
Granny Weatherwax smiled nicely at him, and then waved vaguely at her cards.
"I can never remember whether the ones are worth more or less than the pictures. Forget me own head next, I expect."
They all laughed. Granny hobbled to the other table.
She took the vacant seat, which put the mirror right behind her shoulder. She smiled to herself and then leaned forward, all eagerness.
"So, tell me," she said, "how do you play this game, then?"
All witches are very conscious of stories. They can feel stories, in the same way that a bather in a little pool can feel the unexpected trout. Knowing how stories work is almost all the battle. For example, when an obvious innocent sits down with three experienced card sharpers and says, "How do you play this game, then?" someone is about to be shaken down until their teeth fall out. Magrat and Nanny Ogg sat side by side on the narrow bunk. Nanny was distractedly tickling Grebo's stomach while he purred.
"She'll get into terrible trouble if she uses magic to win," said Magrat. "And you know how she hates losing," she added.
Granny Weatherwax was not a good loser. From her point of view, losing was something that happened to other people.
"It's her ego," said Nanny Ogg. "Everyone's got one of them. An ego. And she's got a great big one. Of course, that's all part of being a witch, having a big ego."
"She's bound to use magic," said Magrat.
"It's tempting fate using magic in a game of chance," said Nanny Ogg. "Cheating's all right. That's practically fair. I mean, anyone can cheat. But using magic, oh, it's tempting fate."
"No, not fate," said Magrat darkly.
Nanny Ogg shivered.
"Come on," said Magrat. "We can't let her do it." "It's her ego," said Nanny Ogg weakly. "Terrible thing, a big ego."
"I got," said Granny, "three little pictures of kings and such like, and three of them funny number one cards."
The three men beamed and winked at one another.
"That's triple onion," said the one who had introduced Granny to the table, and who had turned out to be called Mr. Frank.
"Oh, and that's good, is it?"
"It means you win yet again, dear lady."
He pushed a pile of pennies towards her.
"Gosh," said Granny, "that means I've got, ooh, what would it be? Almost $5 now."
"Can't understand it," said Mr. Frank. "It must be the famous beginner's luck, eh?"
"Soon be poor men if it goes on like this,"
said one of his companions.
"She'll have the coats off our backs right enough," said the third man.
"Think we should give up right now," said Mr. Frank.
"Oh, no, I want to go on," said Granny, grinning anxiously. "I'm just getting the hang of it."
"Well, you'd better give us a sporting chance to win a little bit back," said Mr. Frank. "What about half a dollar a steak?"
"Oh, I reckon she'll want a dollar a steak, a sporting lady like her," said the third man.
Granny looked down at her pile of pennies. For a moment she looked uncertain, and then they could see she realized. How much could she lose the way the cards were going?
"Yes," she said, "a dollar a steak," she blushed. "This is exciting, isn't it?"
"Yeah," said Mr. Frank. He drew the pack towards him.
There was a horrible noise. All three men stared at the bar where shards of mirror were cascading to the floor. What happened? Granny gave him a sweet old smile. She hadn't appeared to look around.
"I reckon the glass he was polishing must have slipped right out of his hand and smashed right into the mirror," she said. "I do hope he doesn't have to pay for it out of his wages, the poor boy."
The men exchanged glances.
"Come on," said Granny. "I've got my dollar all ready."
Mr. Frank looked nervously at the ravaged frame. Then he shrugged. The movement dislodged something somewhere. There was a muffled snapping noise like a mousetrap carrying out the last rites. Mr. Frank went white and gripped his sleeve. A small metal contraption, all springs and twisted metal, fell out. A crumpled-up ace of cups was tangled up in it.
"Whoops!" said Granny.
Magrat peered through the window into the saloon.
"What's she doing now?" hissed Nanny Ogg. "She's grinning again," said Magrat.
Nanny Ogg shook her head.
Ego, she said.
Granny Weatherwax had that method of play that has reduced professional gamblers to incoherent rage throughout the multiverse. She held her cards tightly cupped in her hands, a few inches from her face, allowing the merest fraction of each one to protrude. She glared at them as if daring them to offend her, and she never seemed to take her eyes off them except to watch the dealing. And she took far too long, and she never, ever took risks. After 25 minutes, she was down $1, and Mr. Frank was sweating. Granny had already helpfully pointed out 3 times that he'd accidentally dealt cards off the bottom of the deck, and she'd asked for another pack, because look, this one's got all little marks on the back. It was her eyes, that's what it was. Twice he'd folded on a perfectly good 3-card onion, only to find that she'd been holding a lousy double bagel. Then the 3rd time, thinking he'd worked out her play, he'd called her out and run a decent flush right into the maw of a 5-card onion that the old bag must have been patiently constructing for ages. And then his knuckles went white, and then the dreadful, terrible hag had said, "Have I won with all these little cards? Gosh, aren't I the lucky one?" And then she started humming when she looked at her cards. Normally, the 3 of them would have welcomed this sort of thing. The teeth tappers, the eyebrow raisers, the ear rubbers, they were as good as money in the sock under the mattress, to a man who knew how to read such things. But the appalling old crone was as transparent as a lump of coal, and the humming was insistent. You found yourself trying to follow the tune. It made your teeth tingle. Next thing, you were glumly watching while she laid down a measly broken flush in front of your even more measly 2-card onion and said, "What? Is it me again?" Mr. Frank was desperately trying to remember how to play cards without his sleeve device, a handy mirror, and a marked deck, in the teeth of a hum like a fingernail down a blackboard. It wasn't as if the ghastly old creature even knew how to play properly. After an hour, she was $4 ahead, and when she said, "I am a lucky girl," Mr. Frank bit through his tongue. And then he got a natural great onion. There was no realistic way to beat a great onion. It was something that happened to you once or twice in a lifetime. She folded. The old bitch folded. She abandoned $1 blasted, and she folded. Magrat peered through the window again. "What's happening?" said Nanny.
"They all look very angry."
Nanny took off her hat and removed her pipe. She lit it and tossed the match overboard.
"Oh, she'll be humming, you mark my words. She's got a very annoying hum, has Esme."
Nanny looked satisfied.
"Has she started cleaning out her ear yet?"
"Don't think so.
No one cleans out her ear like Esme."
She was cleaning out her ear. It was done in a very ladylike way, and the daft old baggage probably wasn't even aware she was doing it. She just kept inserting her little finger in her ear and swiveling it around. It made a noise like a small pool cue being chalked. It was displacement activity, that's what it was. They all cracked in the end. She folded again, and it had taken him bloody 5 bloody minutes to put together a bloody double onion.
"I remember," said Nanny Ogg, "when she came over our house for the party when King Verence got crowned, and we played Chase My Neighbour Up the Passage with the kiddies for halfpennies. She accused Jason's youngest of cheating and sulked for a week afterwards."
"Was he cheating?"
"I expect so," said Nanny proudly. "The trouble with Esme is that she don't know how to lose. She's never had much practice."
"Nobsang Dibbler says sometimes you have to lose in order to win," said Magrat.
"Sounds daft to me," said Nanny. "That's Yen Buddhism, is it?"
"No, they're the ones who say you have to have lots of money to win," said Magrat.
"The Yen Buddhists are the richest religious sect in the universe. They hold that the accumulation of money is a great evil and burden to the soul. They therefore, regardless of personal hazard, see it as their unpleasant duty to acquire as much as possible in order to reduce the risk to innocent people.
In the path of the scorpion, the way to win is to lose every fight except the last one. You use the enemy's strength against himself."
"What, you get into it himself, sort of thing?" said Nanny. "Sounds daft."
Magrat glowered.
"What do you know about it?" she said, with uncharacteristic sharpness.
"What?"
"Well, I'm fed up," said Magrat. "At least I'm making an effort to learn things. I don't go around just bullying people and acting bad-tempered all the time."
Nanny took her pipe out of her mouth.
I'm not bad-tempered, she said mildly. I wasn't talking about you.
Oh, well, Esme's always been bad-tempered, said Nanny. It comes natural to her.
But she hardly ever does real magic. What good is being a witch if you don't do magic? Why doesn't she use it to help people?
Nanny peered at her through the pipe smoke.
"'Cause she knows how good she'd be at it, I suppose,' he said. "'Anyway, I've known her a long time, known the whole family. "'All the weatherwaxes is good at magic, even the men. "'They've got this magical streak in them. "'Kind of a curse. "'Anyway, she thinks you can't help people with magic, not properly.
"'It's true, too.' "'Then what good?'
"'Nanny prodded at the pipe with a match.